spotlight back in June 2016, when a judge sentenced Stanford University student Brock Turner to a mere 6 months in county jail for sexual assault, an appallingly light slap on the wrist that infuriated women everywhere, especially after the victim wrote a heart-rending letter about her experience. Angry witches tried to even the scales the best way they knew how, with a mass hex. A Facebook event titled "The Hexing of Brock Turner," created by a witch named Melanie Hexen, instructed would-be hexers to wrap a photo of Turner with a black string and then burn it in a black candle while reciting a spell that called for impotence, nightmares, and constant pain of pine needles in your guts. Did the hex cause Turner to suffer impotence and pine needle gut pain in perpetuity? Probably not. But it gave the 600 or so women who RSVP'd something active and symbolic to do about an outrageous miscarriage of justice that otherwise made them feel small and helpless. This symbolic hex, inspired by Hexen's ritual, can do the same for something in your personal life. Hold or rest the picture in front of you and say aloud the hurts and wrongs that the person has done. Address the picture directly, saying, "I accuse you," for each accusation. Light the candle, saying, "What you have done to me, may it rebound on you tenfold. I curse you to suffer the consequences of your ugliness and cruelty." As the candle burns, picture the person getting smaller and smaller. Carefully pick up the candle and drip black wax onto the picture. As you drip, say out loud, "I condemn you," one time for each of the accusations you spoke earlier. Continue until the picture is obliterated completely. The different types of personal demons. If you're plagued by bad brain habits but can't quite articulate just what is making you feel so down, try envisioning your mental patterns as demons you can fight. Once you know who they are, you can banish them by name. You may want to invent and describe your own, but here are a few we conjured up. Maybe they'll seem familiar. La'ab and La'sura. These twins work together to make you feel worthless, no matter what you do. La'ab is the demon of apathy, convincing you that no matter how hard you work and how much you try, you will always be worthless and undesirable. La'sura attacks from the other side, telling you that the minute you stop working and ease up on yourself, everyone around you will see you for the fraud you are. 2. Ostriax. This demon is a trickster who can use its powers to alter your perceptions of reality. Its favorite way of playing this game is by persuading you that all your friends are mad at you, don't like you, or are laughing at you behind your back. Or all three, if it's feeling playful. 3. Desponon. This demon feeds off of positive energy and self-esteem. Sapped of those qualities, you think of yourself as inherently unworthy of good things and are willing to settle for what is in front of you, because you have no right to expect better. 4. Vindikar. This demon thrives on the misery of others and encourages you to view others' sorrow as your gain. It makes you see success, professional, personal, or emotional, as a ladder, with room for only one at the top, and blocks your access to empathy, forcing you to revel in the failures of others. 5. Avarixas. This demon also enjoys feeling bigger than others, but puffs itself up by acquiring new things. Luxury goods, grand experiences, even desirable people. Not for the pleasure or usefulness of those things, but merely for show. By taking the best things, Avarixas believes it is bettered, when all it really does is mask its own insecurity. 6. Culpezion. This demon at once convinces you that you are more powerful than anything, and that your power only causes pain and suffering. It convinces you that everything bad that happens is your fault, while anything good is a fluke that has nothing to do with you. Culpezion thrives on false feelings of guilt. 7. Frank. Frank's just a dick. Don't listen to Frank. A personal exorcism spell. When a personal demon is living in your brain, you need an exorcism. This spell will help you weaken and eventually evict your unwelcome mental guests. What you'll need: a piece of paper, a black pen and a red pen, matches, a small fireproof bowl, your favorite perfume. When a romantic partner, family member, or boss has treated you badly for a long time, sometimes you internalize their criticism, disapproval, or blame, and direct it against yourself, even when that person is long gone. It's like they left behind a mean little parasitic demon copy of themselves living in your brain to do their dirty work. Or maybe your internal negative voice isn't a copy of someone, but has been living in your head for as long as you remember, telling you that you're worthless and bad. Either way, an exorcism will take care of it. On the piece of paper, write in black pen the negative things your inner nemesis tells you about yourself. Be as specific as possible. Maybe you can even write the story of a specific experience that haunts you. Then use the red pen to draw your demon on top of your words. Make it as ugly and vicious as you feel it is. Fold the paper and place it in the bowl, then light it with a match. As it burns, recite these words. You hold no power. You are not welcome. I am not what you say I am. Mix the ashes with a few drops of perfume. If you don't have a favorite perfume, use a bit of olive oil or coconut oil instead. Dip a finger in the ashes and draw two X's on yourself, one on your forehead and one on your chest. Recite the incantation again, then shower and wash away the curses. For extra power, mix the remaining ashes into your shampoo and wash those demons right out of your hair. Witch History on Demons, D-E-M-O-N-S, and Demons, D-A-E-M-O-N-S. For hundreds of years, the word demon has connoted a being of pure evil. In texts describing the persecution of accused witches, such as the Malleus Maleficarum, demons were consorts of the devil, either controlled by witches to do their evil bidding, or sent by the devil to possess them. Sometimes the witches themselves were demons. However, demons haven't always been evil, and other definitions of the term are much more useful to the modern witch. The word is derived from ancient Greek daimon, D-A-I-M-O-N, meaning a guiding spirit. A daimon could be benevolent or evil. Essentially, it was a powerful force. In Plato's writings, Socrates talks about having a daimonion, a little daimon, which operated as a kind of spidey sense, a consciousness that would tell him if what he was about to do was dangerous. According to Plato's Symposium, love, too, is a great daimon that mediates between humans and gods. That guiding spirit can be interpreted either as an inner soul or a literal spirit that exists outside the body. Judaism, Hinduism, Zoroastrianism, and many other ancient religions have daimon-like creatures in their mythologies, part human, part divine characters that meddle in human affairs, with varying degrees of success. In the Old Testament, they were the false idols that the pagans worshipped and that held no real power. When the term was imported into the New Testament, it took on the meaning of a malevolent and real force. In Acts chapter 16, verses 16 through 24, the apostles Paul and Silas came upon a slave girl possessed by a demon that allowed her to read fortunes and predict the future. Paul declares, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave her." And the demon leaves, much to the chagrin of the girl's owners, who were profiting from her powers. In Mark 5, Jesus heals a man possessed by demons, who declares, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Jesus drives the demons from him, but the message is clear. Demons make you not yourself. They are there only to harm, not to help. Nowadays, we often spell daimon, D-A-I-M-O-N, or daemon, D-A-E-M-O-N, and daemon, D-E-M-O-N, differently to distinguish between the two concepts, but they're still easy to confuse, especially if they are spoken aloud rather than written. But the idea of a friendly, if mischievous, spirit that follows you around and tries to help you sounds much more fun than being possessed by an evil monster, and it's an idea that exists in modern culture. Jiminy Cricket, a fairy godmother, and the demons in The Golden Compass are contemporary fictional examples of the guiding spirits we all wish we had. Listening to your inner voice can take a lot of effort, but thinking of that voice as your guiding demon, you might find it easier to hear. You're listening not to yourself, but to a trusted confidant who has your best interests at heart. Or you can listen to an evil demon, but if bad things happen, we had nothing to do with it. A spell to break negative patterns. This spell will help you disrupt damaging repetitive behaviors by facilitating the release of the physical, emotional, or spiritual attachments that hold you back. What you'll need: a piece of blue string long enough to be tied around your neck, a square of bubble wrap. A bad habit is essentially a commitment, an inadvertent, hurtful commitment of either convenience, fear, or laziness. We procrastinate when we know we should be getting work done. We call the same guy again and again, even though he's been passive-aggressive and mean. We keep saying yes to that one friend, even though we know we mean no. We commit to doing the same thing over and over, and the pattern becomes harder and harder to break. Change is hard, but not impossible, and symbolically freeing yourself with a spell is a good start. Loosely tie the blue string, which represents wisdom and clarity, around your neck. Think of the pattern you are trying to break, such as always saying yes to a friend's repeated requests for favors. Imagine a specific example, something you cannot do every single day, like drive them to their soccer practice or spend 3 hours talking about their relationship. Envision a calendar, and one day at a time, fill the calendar with their requests until every day is full. Pick up the bubble wrap and say, "I release myself from this connection, and I banish it to where it cannot bind me." Pop the bubble wrap one bubble at a time, moving row by row, while repeating the enchantment until you've popped all the bubbles on the square. Each time you pop a bubble, imagine that day's habit puffing into thin air. When you are done, roll up the bubble wrap, tie the string around it, and throw it in the trash. Or recycle it, if that's available where you live. A spell to counter imposter syndrome. Imposter syndrome is a mind-clouding illusion that makes it impossible for you to see your true potential. This ritual will help you lift the veil from your eyes. What you'll need: a roll of toilet paper, an index card or piece of paper, a pen or pencil. The spell is designed to make you feel a little silly while you're doing it. It involves toilet paper, after all. Imposter syndrome, the unshakable feeling that, no matter your achievements, you're an undeserving fraud who's going to lose everything once people catch on to your inherent insufficiency, may be a profound and genuine source of anxiety. But if we've learned anything from Harry Potter, it's that the best way to deal with fear is to laugh in its face. With your eyes closed, wrap the toilet paper around your head so that it covers your eyes. Wrap it loosely so that you can open them when you want to. Continue wrapping until the toilet paper blindfold is several layers thick. As you wrap, say out loud the things you tell yourself when you're feeling insecure. "You can't do this. You don't belong here." Eventually, they'll realize you're incompetent. Once your vision is fully blocked, open your eyes. Imagine a glowing figure becoming dimly visible through the layers of paper. This figure is your best self. Concentrate on your achievements, talents, and positive qualities, and envision the figure glowing brighter. When the imaginary figure is bright and you feel suffused with warmth and positive energy, rip the blindfold in half and crumple the tissue into a ball. Examine the crumpled ball, Then draw a squiggly line on your paper or index card that represents the shape of the discarded blindfold. Keep this card with you and trace the line with your finger when you need to wipe your vision clear of undeserved self-doubt. The greatest one-word spell. No. During the Salem witch trials, judges and witch hunters were most suspicious of defiant women, those who refused to answer questions, who called their accusers liars, and who refused to implicate other women. For example, accused witch Sarah Osborne refused to cave to leading questions about her supposed witchy activities. When asked why she hurt children, she said, "I do not hurt them." In transcripts, this appears to infuriate her accuser. In a 1720 essay by Frances Hutchinson, another woman on trial named Sarah Good is quoted as having told interrogators that, "I am no more a witch than you are a wizard, and if you take away my life, God will give you blood to drink." In short, no is the word of people who do not obey. It's often said that no is a complete sentence, and it's true. Those two letters together make one of the most powerful spells that exist. The power of no is that it lets you stand up for what you believe in. No lets you get what you want. But no may also be the hardest sentence in the English language to say. Although there are many dark and nebulous forces pushing back against your use of it, no also contains the ultimate power to defeat them. It can become your patronus, a bolt of defiant confidence. Here are a few of those forces and how to use your one-word spell to stop them in their tracks. The blazing light of positivity. The implication of the word no is, obviously, a negative one. There is a dominant cultural assumption that fulfilling lives are full of yeses, and only yeses. Remember that movie where Jim Carrey discovers how fun life can be once he's forced to say yes all the time? Yes is the word of people who are chill, who can go with the flow. Only killjoys say no. Just say yes. But saying no to one thing means saying yes to another. Saying no to a night out could mean saying yes to a much-needed night in, or vice versa. Of course it's important to push your boundaries and try new things on occasion. But by incorporating no into your vocabulary, you have more control over when and how you choose to let that positive light shine. The sharp edge of rudeness. No is also considered a rude response, especially for women, who often are taught to be accommodating and pleasing above all else. If you internalize these beliefs, saying no may seem downright offensive. But think of all the times you've said no and it was perfectly polite. No, you didn't want any more mashed potatoes, even though the presence of mashed potatoes did not deeply offend you. No, you didn't feel like going to the movies that night, but you went the next time. No, you didn't like that book, and nobody was mad. No may be definitive and strong, but it doesn't have to be inherently sharp. The dark fear of negativity. Most people are afraid to say no because they're worried about the consequences from whomever they're refusing. It's one thing to summon the courage to pass on going on a date or doing a favor, but quite another to deal with the fury and disappointment of the person you turned down. But by using no more often, you invoke your power to be in charge of your actions. You are not just agreeing to whatever is presented to you. You're a person with wants and needs, with texture, who knows how to take care of herself in any given moment. Even if you do say yes to a chore you don't really want to do, that yes is still a choice, rather than something you agree to in order to avoid hurt feelings. Ultimately, saying no prioritizes your own feelings over any, real or imagined, reactions from someone else. Embracing no doesn't give you free rein to be a jerk. This spell is as useful for its practical immediate effects as for its introspective ones. By practicing no, you're paying attention to your own desires, and in turn, you can examine whether you've actually meant all the yeses you've said over the years. Maybe by saying no, you'll discover you've actually hated ice skating every time you've gone, or that you like having your weekends free from not-so-exciting social obligations, or that you'd rather be alone than go on a lackluster date. Yes allows you to be giving and nurturing, but the magic of no summons your other positive qualities. With it, you can be assertive, protective, or discerning. Like a lot of spells, invoking no can have a profound effect on others. Some may respond with frustration or anger, but in our experience, the spell will turn many friends, partners, and family members into gentler, more understanding people who are better attuned to what you want to say yes to. And that makes your yes even more powerful and special. Other ways of saying no. That won't be possible. Can I propose a different idea? That's not really my thing, but you have fun. I just need a night in, you know? I appreciate you asking, but I can't. My plate is full right now. This may be a white lie, but it's an acceptable one. A spell for rejection. Ghosting is reliable only if you're a literal ghost. Some people won't take hints, and others deserve a polite but firm dismissal. This spell will help you steel yourself for the difficult goodbye conversation. What you'll need: a squeezable bottle of honey, pleasant-smelling liquid soap. Maybe you're on a date, and before dinner is over, you can tell you just aren't connecting. But after saying goodnight, you receive a "when can I see you again?" text. Maybe a friend did something to hurt you deeply, but they keep inviting you to coffee despite your repeated excuses. Use this spell to make the "thanks but no thanks" conversation easier on you, which will make it easier on them, too. Grasp the honey in your dominant hand and draw a heart in the open palm of your non-dominant hand. Visualize the face of the person you need space from. Say aloud, "I respect your feelings, but I am not responsible for your feelings." Carefully, without crushing the heart, cover it with soap and turn on the faucet. Rubbing in careful circles, completely wash the honey away. Backfire. When self-care spells go wrong. If you've read any fairy tale or watched any movie about magic, you've seen a wish or spell backfire. Maybe someone wishes that everything he touches turns to gold, then finds he can't pick up a burger without turning it into metal. Maybe someone wishes the goblins would steal her baby brother, but is horrified when they actually do. Magic sometimes works a little too well. Spells for self-care can backfire this way too. Finally giving yourself permission to put yourself first may feel like a dream come true, but once you start treating yourself more kindly, it's a slippery slope into plain old selfishness. Have cookies for breakfast again? Sure, treat yourself. Skip the birthday party you said you'd go to? Hey, you could use a night in. Demand praise and soothing from your friends? Listen, you deserve it. Self-care seems decadent, but that's just because you're not used to it, right? Well, maybe, but maybe not. If your self-care magic goes rogue, you become some person who always puts herself first, which defeats the purpose of the spell. Lax, permissive self-care, slacking, overindulging, pushing your responsibilities onto others while pampering yourself, may feel good in the moment, but in the long run it saps your energy and seals you off from the people you care about. By that point, it may be too late to stop. Self-indulgence can operate like addiction, where you need bigger and bigger hits to feel anything, and the crash gets worse every time. To avoid going off the rails, tap into personal strength, not just leniency, but self-reliance. Ask yourself a few questions before engaging in self-care to make sure the spell won't blow up in your face. What do I gain from this? What does someone else lose? How do those two compare? Can I differentiate what I want from what I need? Who am I depending on for help right now? When did I last ask for their support? Do I always seek their help, or do I rely on others, too? Have I offered equivalent support to this person in the past? How long ago? Will this spell, ritual, or treatment address the symptoms of my troubles or the cause? If it treats only the symptoms, will it make the cause worse? What is the purpose of relaxing now? Does it let me rest up for future progress, or does it create a block to that progress? If you notice that any particular self-care spell tends to go awry, try redirecting its energy towards something positive. For instance, instead of impulse shopping, buy a gift for a friend, find a homeless shelter's Amazon wish list, purchase something from an organization that donates proceeds to charity, or contribute to a crowdfunding effort. You'll still get the endorphin rush of shopping, but you'll also be giving back. Instead of sugary comfort food, try hydrating with water, coconut water, or herbal tea. Dehydration sets in quickly when you're distracted, like when you're harried or sad, and makes it harder to cope physically and mentally. Add a little honey for extra sweetness. Instead of asking for support, offer it. If you're feeling a bit down but aren't dealing with a crisis, you can call your go-to agony aunt or broadcast your unhappiness on social media and get enough love to feel better for a day. But remember, reaching out to a friend with words of pride, love, and encouragement makes you feel good and strengthens your relationship instead of wearing it down. A spell to break a curse. This spell may not stop bad things from happening, but hopefully it will remind you that things won't always be this way. What you'll need: a long white candle, matches, a bowl, water. Many people like to believe that life has some sort of order. Actions have reactions, and decisions have consequences. Logic dictates that good and bad things should happen at roughly even intervals. But that's not how the world works. There is no pattern or constantly balancing scale. The randomness of the universe means that, inevitably, misfortunes will sometimes clump together, with no fun or happy things popping up to compensate. At times like these, you might wonder if you're under a curse. Clearing away your hopelessness can be the first of many good things to turn your luck around. Light the candle and let some wax drip into the bottom of the bowl, then use that wax to secure the lit candle upright. The candle should be long enough that the wick extends an inch or two above the bowl's rim. Fill the bowl with water, and then close your eyes. Imagine the negative events in your life coming together to form a shape of a specific color and size. Maybe it's a tiny red triangle, or a bright yellow rhombus. Hold that shape in your mind long enough for the image to become clear. Cup your hands in front of you and imagine the shape pouring out of your mind and into your hands, then cascading out of your hands and into the bowl. As this happens, imagine your feelings of inevitability flowing out too. It's a cliche, but repeat to yourself, "This too shall pass." You'll be surprised how much you need that reminder sometimes. Once you feel like your negativity has drained, pluck the candle from the bowl and extinguish the flame in the water. Then take the bowl to a sink and wash your hands with the water in the bowl, watching everything that poured into it flowing away. Chapter 7. Divination. The power to decide your destiny. Wouldn't you love magic that works in real life the way it does in Bewitched? Wiggle your nose and the person you want to see materializes in your apartment. Or your friends forget that embarrassing thing you did. Or you suddenly land your dream job. This is fiction, of course. You can't order around the universe's energy like a butler. The rituals in this book are designed to affect your brain instead of the world, because we can't give you a way to effortlessly manifest your ideal partner, job, wardrobe, or life. Nobody can. But what about the power to see the future? Our witchcraft can give you insight about yourself and the world around you, enough insight to foresee what's likely to happen, or at least to figure out what you want to happen, the best way to achieve it, and what, if anything, is stopping you. Gaining such insight may not be easy. Sometimes your ambitions are buried under layers of anxiety or mental blocks. Sometimes you're genuinely uncertain, and no amount of digging into your psyche will reveal one clear, life-changing direction to pursue. But that's all okay. Making peace with the unknown frees you to discover opportunities, choices, and dreams you'd never have considered otherwise. The trick to finding these things is to speak your desires, or, in a pinch, your uncertainty, out loud, forcing yourself to reckon with it. Many of the rituals we present include an incantation, but sometimes just admitting your hopes and wishes aloud is enough, even without a ritual. Witchcraft can help you follow your path, but more than that, it can help you create one. Maybe you have a broad idea of what you want out of life and need to narrow it down. Maybe you're choosing between a few options. And maybe the question of life is too big and you feel more comfortable starting small. In this chapter, we'll lay out how to intuit your heart's desire, accept when the crystal ball is dark, and be more comfortable with life's inevitable failures. No matter what, flexing your divination muscles will help you get in touch with your insight. And the stronger it gets, the more unstoppable you become. Channeling what lies beyond. How to care for your future self. A recent study by researchers at the University of Zurich found that self-control and empathy depend on the same part of the brain. This makes sense when you think about it. Whenever you engage in disciplined behavior, you're doing so out of compassion and kindness to your future self. Sure, present you doesn't want to do the dishes before bed, but morning you still won't want to do them, plus she'll be scrambling to get to work. You should cut her a break. You don't always pay your bills, put things back where they belong, and drag yourself to yoga because these things sound fun. You do them because you have keen empathy for your future self, and you know she'll thank you. Science may support the connection between self-control and empathy, but it's magic that lets you harness its power. When you're feeling grumpy about chores and other obligations, try summoning a vision of your future self and conversing with her. You can use any ritual you want to summon your future self, but we recommend looking into the mirror in a dim room, maybe a bathroom with the light off but the door open, letting your eyes relax, and saying, "When I meets I, may I see I." Then look your reflection in the eye and talk to her as though she's you from tomorrow, next week, or whenever is relevant. As you're talking, weigh future you's needs against your current wants. How happy will you be if you put off this obligation? How happy will she be if you do it now? What do you gain, and what does she lose if you kick the can down the road? What do you lose, and what does she gain if you just get it over with? Sometimes you'll probably still decide to just brush your teeth and go to bed. Aren't you lucky that you're already standing at the bathroom mirror? Maybe you're feeling ill, and you'd do a terrible job grocery shopping anyway, and besides, going after work would be more convenient because you'll already be out of the house. But sometimes, the thought of future you's delight as she slips into crisp, clean sheets at the end of the day is more than enough reason to go to the laundromat. All you need to do is ask her, and take her answers to heart. A spell to name your heart's desire. This spell uses a variation of a traditional sage burning to trick your secret wish right out of you without you even noticing. What you'll need: dried whole sage leaves, a fireproof bowl, a small model or drawing of a heart, matches. Any number of spells can help make wishes come true. But what if you're having a hard time figuring out what your wish is? You yearn for something, certainly. But your feelings aren't coalescing into tangible thoughts that you can acknowledge, assess, or act on. This spell is like step zero in that wish-making process, allowing you to tease your desire out of the clouds of uncertainty. On a table, place the sage in the bowl and prop up the heart behind it. Light the sage and let it smolder, its fragrant smoke filling the air. As you smell it, feel the space around you empty of all concerns and energies. Looking at the heart, begin talking to yourself out loud about your inner feelings, whatever was concerning you that made you try this spell. You could start with a general topic you believe your inner wish is about, or something as broad as, I feel like I want something, but I don't know what. Say anything that comes into your head. Imagine the words flowing into the heart, and then feelings flowing out of it and into you. If you struggle to find words to say, try to frame your thoughts by completing one of these sentences. When I picture my future, I see blank. When I think of being happy, I am blank. What bothers me about my life right now is blank. If I could have anything in the world, I'd want blank. By speaking thoughts aloud, whatever they are, you'll come closer to revealing your deepest desires. A ritual for when the crystal ball is dark. This ritual will not reveal the future, but it will help you make peace with uncertainty and trust that whatever decisions you make will bring you value and knowledge. What you'll need: a white candle, matches, a coin. If you're at a crossroads in your life and unsure of your next step, there's no way you can force yourself into knowing what you want. In a society where everyone is encouraged to be ambitious and have a plan, or at least know what they want to be for the rest of their lives when they're 17, letting yourself live in the unknown can be incredibly anxiety-inducing. This practice will help keep you calm in the presence of uncertainty. Light the candle and place it in front of you on a flat surface. Spin the coin in front of the candle and let it fall where it may. Pick it up and keep spinning it as you recite the following. Heads or tails, I do not know, but it matters not. The coin is still a coin, whichever face it shows. Heads or tails, I do not know, but it matters not. My life is still my own, whichever path I travel. Recite this incantation as many times as you need until you feel comforted. Sleep with the coin under your pillow for one night. The Alchemy of Failure: How to Create Golden Opportunities. Many of us are held back from flying bravely into the future, not because we don't want to take charge and soar, but simply because we're burdened with anxiety. Sometimes we worry about big, uncontrollable things. What if I get sick? Or if someone in my family does? What if the economy tanks? What if there's a huge earthquake and my state falls into the ocean? But the rest of the time, probably most of the time, that anxiety boils down to a fear of failure. Fear of failure doesn't just keep you from leaping into the future. It also keeps you from all the steps on the path: planning, stating your goals, and creating changes. Fear of failure keeps your head down and stops you from looking beyond what you already have. It keeps you from doing the basic liberating magic of naming your heart's desire. Worry is healthy when it protects you from making the kinds of flying leaps that can cause physical harm, catastrophic debt, or mental health disaster. But worrying about things like rejection, looking stupid, disappointing parents or peers, these fears rarely deserve the weight we invest in them. The good news is, they tend to crumble when you realize that no evaluation of your performance in life is more important than your own. What does failure even mean for women who are joyfully unruly and happy to live outside society's expectations? Sure, we know that the masses have long been happy to judge and punish these women for imagined crimes, outlandish acts, and things done wrong, improperly or not at all. But these days, nobody's going to burn you at the stake for a screw-up, real or imagined. If someone judges your romantic choices, your workplace challenges, your creative efforts, your style of dress, who cares? They can put you on trial, but you don't have to show up to court. The first step in defeating failure is embracing your unruliness and recognizing that operating outside the norm is kind of your thing. You don't have to accept the lead weight of your fear as an immovable burden. You can refashion it into something more precious and helpful. By using your fear of failure, or even actual failure, as an ingredient in a bigger magical work, you can apply a little alchemy and transmute your setback into success. Here are a few ways to make it happen. Ingredient: dropping the ball on an obligation, task, or deadline. Use for a centering spell. Consider the situation that led you to forget your responsibility. Did you have too much on your plate? Do you lack a good way of keeping track of tasks? Was the thing you were asked to do beyond your abilities in some way? And do you need to learn to delegate? See this failure as a way to evaluate your organizational and support systems and seek out more help or structure where needed. Ingredient: failing to get something, a job, a grant, entry to an educational program you worked hard for. Use for a scrying spell. Identifying what exactly about this opportunity appealed to you can refine your vision for the future or isolate a specific single wish you can fulfill in other ways. Once, when Jess was turned down for a job, she realized that she was upset less about the gig and more because it was close to home, which would have enabled her to get a dog. So she just got a dog. Ingredient: trying to learn a new skill and kind of sucking at it. Use for a mind-melding spell. Seek out examples of others who have enthusiastically messed something up. Videos of cats trying to jump onto things and missing. Collections of Pinterest fails. Music that's bad on purpose. Try the Portsmouth Sinfonia or Smith College's Crapapella a cappella group, which is the ne plus ultra of gleeful failure. Or the YouTube videos of Simone Yetch, a robotics enthusiast whose creations just fail and flop around. Once you've observed one of these particularly joyful failures, try to sink into that same feeling. What if, instead of beating yourself up for not immediately performing to a high standard, you were just enjoying the hell out of this new activity? Ingredient: embarrassing yourself in public. Use for a strengthening spell. More often than not, the horror of making a fool of yourself is way worse in the abstract. Once it happens, you realize you can handle it. Check in with yourself. Do you still have all your best qualities? Check in with your friends. Do they still like you? Chances are all is well. You faced embarrassment and came through with your self-concept and relationships intact. You tested your mettle and survived. Hang on to the knowledge of this strength for next time. How to read tea leaves. Tassiography is the time-honored art of reading tea leaves, or coffee grounds, to see the future. Many cultures believe that by brewing and drinking a cup of loose-leaf tea, swirling the dregs, and turning the cup upside down, the leaves will form a specific shape that you can interpret to see what lies ahead. There are tons of possible interpretations, but there are a few to get you started in the bonus PDF. A spell for embracing failure. This spell lets you practice being confused and clumsy and still fall in love with whatever happens. What you'll need: a blindfold, a pen, a piece of paper, colored pencils, crayons, or other art supplies. When you try something unfamiliar, it stands to reason that you won't do a perfect job. You're unclear exactly how it works, you haven't practiced, and you don't know the tricks or the rules. But sometimes you're better off doing something imperfectly than doing it by the book, and doing it imperfectly is always better than not doing it at all. Practicing imperfection will allow you to be more flexible when and if failure does arrive. Cover your eyes with a blindfold, or just close them. Hold the pen in your dominant hand and the paper in your other hand. Raise your hands and say aloud, "I welcome darkness. I welcome confusion. I welcome failure and the gifts it brings." Spin around 7 times, Widdershins, counterclockwise. Sit on the floor and, while you're still dizzy, immediately draw 3 pictures: yourself, an animal to represent the natural world, and a celestial object to represent the spiritual world. When you're finished drawing, remove the blindfold and look at your masterpiece. You'll likely discover a bunch of squiggly lines that barely resemble what you were trying to draw. Turn the paper 90 degrees. Contemplate the drawing from this perspective and identify the parts you like best. Maybe they look like what you meant to draw, maybe they look like something else entirely, or maybe they're just beautifully abstract. With the crayons or colored pencils, decorate these parts of the drawing, turning them into small works of art. When you are finished, hold the paper to your heart and say aloud, "My failure is beautiful. My failure is something new." Hang the finished work on your fridge for a week or display it near your desk or workspace. If fear of failure has been holding you back from a specific project or pursuit, keep the drawing up until you make a good faith effort at starting. Then tear the picture into tiny pieces and release it into the wind. Witch History: The Myth of Mother Shipton. The Renaissance-era English soothsayer Ursula "Mother" Shipton was in many ways the epitome of the witch. She had mysterious origins, a quarrelsome temperament, and an intuitive nature. She is known now for being the Northern Prophetess, an oracle that predicted the future, and her cave is now a tourist attraction in England. But overall, she just seems like a smart woman. As the most popular origin myth goes, Shipton, born in 1488, had no father but was sired by the Phantom of Apollo, just like Merlin before her. Other theories claim her father was a necromancer. Although the Merlin-esque origin story is certainly flattering, more likely the truth is that Shipton, and Merlin, maybe, was simply born out of wedlock, and the people of her town invented supernatural explanations to understand the seeming total impossibility of an unmarried woman getting pregnant. Necromancer dad or no, Shipton's birth scandalized the neighbors, and they accused her mother, Agatha, of being a witch. Agatha reportedly was brought to court, but before the judge could punish her for incontinency, she pointed out that he himself had impregnated two women outside of marriage, so it'd be pretty hypocritical for him to judge her. Clearly, these women came from a long line of badasses. As an adult, Shipton apparently had the appearance of a classic evil witch: long nose, pimples, and hunched posture. At least according to a 1667 description by Richard Head. Granted, this was written more than 100 years later, and at the height of the prosecution of witches to boot. Supposedly, she married a Toby Shipton when she was 24, though he died a few years later, and she spent most of her life around her cave near Knaresborough, Yorkshire. There, she gathered plants and herbs and brewed them into potions, despite taunting by the nearby townspeople, many of whom secretly sought out her brews anyway. In temperament, she was less demonically driven than cheerfully vindictive. She played merry pranks on those who abused her, according to 1775's The Wonderful History and Surprising Prophecies of Mother Shipton. When some guy dared to call her the devil's bastard and hagface, she reportedly used magic to steal his hat off his head and replace it with a portable toilet. Shipton is best known for being a soothsayer. She predicted the futures of those around her and of the world at large, seemingly to anyone who would listen. She is credited with predictions about everything from train travel to the telegraph to the dissolution of the Catholic Church. Though she was a contemporary of Nostradamus, she never attained the fame of the renowned male seer, give you one guess why, but her visions were recorded by others. Except those visions were all made up. Her prophecies were published centuries after her death, and some authors even admitted that they faked them and attributed them all to her. So why choose to credit this woman? Perhaps the soothsayer myth was based somewhat in truth. With the written accounts made so long after her death, we'll never know what she did or didn't say. Or perhaps Mother Shipton had a reputation for being particularly intuitive. Women have long been relegated to the role of observer rather than actor. And when all your energy is put into observation, you can't help but notice things. An ugly woman born out of wedlock would certainly have been on the sidelines of early modern English society. Plus, there was the whole living in a cave thing. So Shipton probably had a lot of time to think, take notice, and, perhaps, become an insightful student of human nature. Whatever Mother Shipton was like when alive, her myth has only grown stronger as the years pass. Today, she is hailed as a mystic, a prophet, and a sorceress. But she was also a woman who lived a hard life, and who maybe understood just a little bit more about other human beings than they were able to perceive themselves. Often, that's all a witch is, and all we need to claim the title ourselves. May we all get the cool cave monuments we deserve. Navigating flawed visions. What to do when predictions go awry. You may not have visions of the future like Phoebe from Charmed, but we all have some amount of power to predict what will happen. Sometimes you can tap into those abilities using a crystal ball, a tarot deck, or other tools that help you listen. But you also put your precognitive abilities to work, without really thinking about it, every time you make a plan. Unfortunately, your natural power to predict the future sometimes goes wrong. Sometimes you invest in the idea of a positive future that ultimately does not come to pass. You plan for it, you picture it in detail, you count on it, and then it falls through. You're now living in a present you never thought could happen, and maybe you've lost the ability to trust yourself. Witches are nothing if not resilient. But when you're shocked into a future you never envisioned, conjuring your strength and resolve can seem impossible. And platitudes like, stay strong, or don't worry, offer little help, because if you knew how to stay strong, presumably you'd be doing it already. How can you tap into your strengths at a moment when you feel bewildered and weak? Assess what went wrong. When the future is unfolding in ways you didn't expect, return to your tools to figure out what happened. Mastery of clairvoyance requires unbiased assessment of the information you're receiving, which, for most people, is incredibly difficult. A little retrospective examination can help hone your intuition. Ask yourself, were you pushing your interpretation toward what you wanted to happen? Were you ignoring red flags that pointed to reality? Was there an inside voice that you had a hard time listening to? Keep your eyes forward. Don't let self-assessment keep you bogged down in past mistakes. Remember, magic is made of small acts that build into lasting change. The past may be done, but the future is not fixed. In times of crisis, return to small things that make you feel capable and competent to help you focus. Then use that focus to take action toward determining the future you want. Tap into your power. What makes you feel powerful? Lighting some incense and meditating? Convening with your coven to make plans for action? Cooking for others to make your community feel safe and loved? Whatever it is, now's the time to do it. It may not feel like much in the face of your scary new future, and it won't immediately transform things into a happier circumstance. But hopefully it will help you reclaim your power in a time of helplessness and show the world that you still have some control. An opposite scenario can happen too. You're so convinced that a future plan will result in disaster that you never start trying to make it, which means that you never get a chance to be proven wrong. When you're paralyzed by dark visions, magic can help you snap out of your funk and build a more realistic idea of the future. Enchant your mind with an amulet. Sometimes you're bogged down by fears you can't shake because your brain just can't figure out how to stop obsessing, even if it wants to. Give it an excuse to calm down by using a magical amulet of strength and protection. This could be a piece of jewelry or a watch or pin you wear every day, but the amulet may be more effective if you hunt for a new one that feels just right. Every time you wear it or notice its weight around your neck or finger, let its presence draw your mind out of the nebulousness of the future and back into the certainty of the present. Focus on what you can change. It's easy to feel defeated by big worries on the horizon, but you'll be better equipped to cope with the winds of fate if you have control over your broom. Think small. What can you do to make the future more approachable? You don't have to solve everything right now, but you can help bolster yourself by attacking small, manageable problems. Even a task as insignificant as opening a document or addressing an envelope can banish a bit of fear. Tell a tale. Witches are creatures of folklore, so if you're stuck on one dire vision of the future, try tapping into the profound power of storytelling. Spin a yarn about the worst thing that could happen, then one about the best possible outcome, and finally a bunch of stories about various options in between. What might you do in each situation, and how does that change the ending? If the worst truly came to pass, what concrete steps could you take to improve the situation? Envisioning specifics will help you feel more prepared and calm you down. A spell to keep going. Like many traditional spells for seeing the future, this modified scrying spell uses a reflective surface as a medium. You can use any small handheld object that reflects light, even the screen of your cell phone. What you'll need: a small handheld reflective surface such as a mirror or a cell phone. Traditional witches and sorcerers might tell the future, or scry, by peering into a body of water, a bowl of ink, or, you guessed it, a crystal ball, but you can use anything you have on hand. We all have times when the future seems overwhelmingly difficult, meaningless, or fraught with peril. These are times to call on your coven, to care for yourself and the people you love. But there are also times when magic can remind you that all is never lost. Some, maybe. Lots, even. But not all. Even when you can't choose your future, you can choose how to react to it. Dread or anticipation. Galvanization or despair. When fear and anxiety keep you from clearly seeing what needs to be done and what's on the horizon, this spell will help you focus. While standing, stare at your reflection in the reflective surface and let your eyes relax until your vision blurs. Say aloud, "The future is dark. The future holds fright. Show me my solid ground. Show me my light." Continue looking at your reflection and relaxing your eyes, imagining that you are looking at a dense cloud or fog bank. This is your anxiety and despair, clouding your vision. Think of one single, simple, concrete action you can take to help things go right, or at least less wrong. It should be simple. Instead of apply for jobs, think send one cover letter. Instead of pack up the apartment, think, put my dishes in a box. Look down, moving your scrying surface with your gaze so that it stays in front of your eyes. Picture a cairn of rocks jutting up through the fog. This is your simple concrete action, your solid ground. Next, think of one thing, however small, that you're looking forward to. It can be soon or far off, big or small. A vacation, a movie with a friend, this Sunday's crossword puzzle, your afternoon snack. Look up, moving the scrying surface with your gaze so that it stays in front of your eyes. Picture a star burning through the fog. This is your light, your reminder that the future holds at least one promise. Close your eyes and stand for a moment with your feet solidly planted, feeling warmed by the light. The spell is done, but you can repeat it any time you feel overwhelmed. DIY rituals. How to make your own spell. As we've mentioned, predicting the future is an imprecise art. You can't anticipate everything, and even with lots of precaution and probing of what's to come, there will always be outcomes you didn't plan for. For this reason, no one book could ever contain every spell you'll ever need. Luckily, our kind of witchcraft is adaptable. You can use